Hello and welcome to UK Health Radio. This is Dora Walsh, your nutritionist for my show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. I've been working in the field of natural and functional medicine for 14 years. I'm a qualified nutritionist and nutritional therapist, and I support my clients to overcome their chronic health concerns like hormonal imbalances, digestive problems, chronic fatigue, autoimmune conditions, low immunity, skin concerns, and more, even long COVID. You can find out more about me on my website, NutriHeal.net, and also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Well, this week, I'm going to be speaking to Vicky Godfrey. We're going to be talking about detoxification and the importance of looking after your detox pathways. So maybe you don't know what that means, but maybe you've heard the word detoxification. Often people go on detox diets or weight loss diets and they want to clean up their body, but really they don't know what that means. We're going to clear that up for you today, but we're going to be talking a lot about the liver as well as the other forms of detoxification. And liver is only one of the ways we detoxify. A lot of people don't realize. So that's going to be really interesting for our discussion today, because you'll learn how to detoxify through different routes. It's not all about your liver. I've got Vicky Godfrey on the show with me this week. She's an ex-award-winning producer. She's a naturopathic nutritionist, and she's trained in cancer and nutrigenomics. She's the founder of DNAPal.me. That's DNAPal.me. And you can find her as well on Instagram and Facebook. So on Instagram, you can find her at DNA.pal and also at @a_naturalpath. And on Facebook, you can find her on @naturalpath and also at DNAPal app. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. I really appreciate you joining us. Now, this week, we're going to be talking about detoxification and the importance of looking after your detox pathways. That's quite a big topic. But before we talk about that and all the foods and the lifestyle things that people can do to support detoxification and feel amazing, can you tell me a bit more about how you came to become an expert in detoxification, how you came to be a nutritionist? Were you looking to detoxify your body? Tell us a bit more about your story.
Thank you. Well, I was a producer for many years working in TV, and your lifestyle within TV is very much it's fast. You work a lot of long hours and you drink a lot and you eat at some amazing restaurants, but probably not the healthiest of restaurants. And so my weight, you know, all through, when I look back at my TV career compared to my weight now, I was always kind of chunky but funky, people used to say, you know. I was not overweight, but I wasn't in balance, if we can say that. The body was a bit larger. And now looking back and understanding my body a lot more, I understand that that was down to the lifestyle that I was leading and probably the amount of alcohol that I was consuming at the time to deal with the stress from the 14-hour days that I was doing. So, you know, went around that. And then I retrained as a yoga teacher. And I retrained as a yoga teacher mainly because I found yoga to help with my migraines when I get my menstrual cycle. And after training in yoga, there was all these new words that people were using for food that I'd never heard of. I used to call quinoa, quinoa. And I used to call acai, and, you know, all of these things. They were just these new terminologies that I didn't even, or new words that I didn't even know how to pronounce. So when I went to the College of Naturopathic Medicine, I was only going there to find out a little bit more about foods and things like that. Before I know it, they'd had me signed up and I'd paid. And I left there a little bit dazed going, how did that happen? But it was honestly one of the best things that ever did happen to me. I'm so grateful now when I look back to everything that I've learned. And then how did I get so passionate about liver was I did a genetic test for myself. We were very much encouraged that through our study so we could understand our bodies more. And one of my, I had a variant on my GSTM1 gene and I didn't understand what that meant. So I went to see a nutritional therapist that was trained in nutrigenomics, and she explained that my liver is like, with my GSTM1, my liver is like a motorway. So one lane is permanently blocked, like the M6. It's constantly got roadworks on, and the other two lanes are fine and detoxify absolutely fine from the liver. But if you put your body into rush hour, then there's nowhere for the rubbish to go because the liver won't detoxify so well. So I then spent a year after that, after my second baby. I was 13 and a half stone after the second baby. And I spent a year working on my liver and on my maternity leave. And over that period, I lost 3.5 stone. And then after that year of being really strict on my diet, I kind of relaxed a bit more and another 1.5 stone came off, and I'm 46 now and I'm just over 8.5 stone, which is, I've never been like that since I was sort of 18, 20 before I started drinking alcohol. So it kind of proves to me that as you get older, you don't need to just complain about middle-aged weight coming on. Actually, if you put the right things into your body, you can be whatever you want to be, if that makes sense. I'm truly in balance. I feel in balance now.
I love what you're saying, because a lot of people, they think they get maybe getting older and they start putting on weight and they just say, oh, it's my own coming up to the menopause, or I'm getting older. And it's like this expectation that things are going to go south. But really, actually, it's because they don't fully understand how their body works. Yeah. And the best foods and lifestyle to get their body to function to its optimal capacity and be at the perfect weight. And when you can fully understand your body, which you've done at the genetic level, so you've gone really deep, then you know exactly where maybe that liver pathway wasn't working well, and therefore you had to, by the sounds of it, support your liver so that it could function better, and also bring in certain foods, take certain foods out to enable that liver to work better, and you've been able to lose weight without struggling or starving yourself.
Yes. No, I never starved myself. I'm not very good. I get hangry, you know, when you're hungry and angry. So I'm not a starver at all. You know, I'll fast in the evenings, you know, and then breakfast. But yeah, like through the day, I need food and I need nutrients. So you definitely, you know, never go hungry.
You did the genetic test after you had your baby. You lost a lot of weight, 3.5 stone, and now you're 8.5 stone. So it sounds like you're maintaining that well.
Yeah, it was five stone in total. It
wow.
was 3.5 in 1 year, and then was going back to sort of a semi-normal diet. It was never not normal, if that makes sense. It was just healthier, you know, picking and choosing the right ingredients. Another 1.5 stone came off the following year. So it was five stone in total.
That's amazing. Now, I want to give our listeners a lot of hope, because a lot of people, as we know, maybe they're not feeling well, maybe they're overweight, maybe they think they need a detox. And really, genetic testing is really useful. But even if you haven't done that yet, and we can talk more about genetic testing, there are many things you can do to support your detox pathways, which could lead to much healthier life, more energy, weight loss. So where can we start? What do you think is the best and first thing somebody can do to start their detox journey? Where should they start?
I think we have to look at a toxin first. I think a toxin is a really good place to start. And what is a toxin? It's like a substance that interferes with the body. It's not particularly good for the body. And where do toxins come from? They come from pesticides. They come from our sort of Wi-Fi, EMF, pollution, bad oils and things like that, that can all be inflammatory to the system. So if we've got one of the pathways that I like to look at, if we've got too many toxins coming in, and if we look at our detox pathways, the ones that we do have, so we have one from our lymphatic system, which is under our arms, we have our urine, and we have our poo, if I can say poo on this show.
Yeah.
Sorry, bowel movements. And they're sort of our and breath. So there are sort of four different pathways to get these toxins out that our body doesn't need. I think that's quite a good place to start. And it's looking after those pathways and also being aware of how many toxins you are putting in, because, you know, like pesticides have, they don't do any good to the body. So the body needs to get rid of them if they're on the food. And the majority of time that is excreted by your feces. So, yeah, I hope that's kind of a good starting point.
Yeah, a good starting point. So yeah.
The toxin is and what your four detox pathways are for getting rid of those toxins in the body.
Yeah. And remembering that we're living in a toxic soup. So you mentioned pesticides. A lot of people are not aware that Wi-Fi is a type of toxin in terms of the electromagnetic radiation.
Metals.
Your heavy metals, shampoos, conditioners, if they're not the healthiest ones, they contain polyglycol, these funny chemicals that go onto our skin through makeup, and even like lotions that go onto our skin that can seep into our body. And I think a lot of people, maybe they're not aware that, you know, all of these chemicals are going into the body and the body has to deal with it. The liver and the body has to deal with it, doesn't it?
Yes, because the body, what I love about the human body, and I'm sure you do, Dora, is the body is always trying to make us healthy, keep us healthy and keep us alive for as long as possible. So if we're putting all of these toxins in, it's just going to make the cells and the body just sicker and sicker, especially if our detox pathways aren't optimized.
Yeah.
To get the rubbish out and the heavy metals and chemical toxins and things like alcohol. You know, alcohol's part of our society. Alcohol is encouraged almost within our society. But when you look at what alcohol is, it's a toxin that paralyzes you, which is where paralytic drunk comes from.
Oh, wow.
You know, and most people understand that alcohol and the liver play a part, because, you know, too much alcohol can cause things like cirrhosis of the liver and things like that, where the liver is just getting sicker and sicker, you know, that has been compounded by the alcohol that we're in, sort of encouraged socially to drink. Wow. We have 85,000 known toxins in our environment right now. To put that in some perspective, in early 1900s, we had 2000 known toxins in our environment. So when somebody says, oh, but my grandfather, he smoked 40 a day and he ate bacon sandwiches every single day and he lived till he was 100. His body wasn't fighting 85,000 environmental toxins at the same time. So even though, you know, bacon's classed as sort of a class one carcinogenic, you know, unless you buy nice bacon without the nitrates, of course, your body still has to deal with that. And same with the cigarette smoke and all of the heavy metals that are in tobacco, your body still has to get rid of that. But now we're fighting this whole environmental toxins that, like I said, are 85,000.
Yeah, it's shocking. Now, let's talk about these pathways that you mentioned. You've mentioned the lymphatic system, the urinary system when you go to the bathroom, the bowel movements and the breath. I'd love to start on bowel movements, because as a nutritionist, I'm very obsessed with them. And it's what I focus on a lot with my clients, because I always think that if the bowel's not clear, if you're not having good bowel movement, it's hard to do much else with the body. I always like that to start with that. So can you tell us a bit more about bowel movements as the basis for detoxification?
Yeah.
I mean, what we need to do to get them going.
But I agree. If anyone comes to me and they don't poop, I mean, some people think it's normal not to poo for 3-4 days at a time.
Exactly.
And I point out to them, and I say, but how many times are you eating a day? And they go, 3. And I go, well, all those pesticides on those foods, if you're eating a really clean organic diet, where are they going? And they sit there and think about it. And I go, that's all building up in your body, all of those toxins, because it's not being excreted. It's not being moved. And, you know, and then you've got 3 meals a day and you're not pooing for 3 days. That's like 9 meals of pesticides.
Oh, it's awful.
That's all backing up. And the few instances of bowel cancer that I've worked with, they have all been people that don't get rid of their feces daily. You know, some are a week, some are 2 weeks. So like you, it comes down to then I start working with the gut. So working with gut health, elimination. So there's a thing called the elimination diet, which I always start with, taking out dairy, sugar, caffeine, alcohol and gluten. So taking those 5 things out first of all, and then people go, well, what can I eat? And I go, loads of fruit and vegetables and lots of nice wild fish and lots of organic meat or beans or legumes, or, you know, if you're vegetarian or vegan, you know, just taking out the processed foods and the gluten is huge. So starting there to try and get the elimination process of the bowel working again. So generally, I tend to find that it's the gluten and the dairy are the biggest blockers for blocking people up.
Yeah.
Literally. And when we remove the gluten out, those pathways generally start to work again. And people find me up, like, oh, I've pooed. And I get
such a relief. It's so important. Now, gluten, just to remind our listeners, where can they find gluten and what is it? Because they might not understand. Not everyone knows. They're seeing a lot of gluten-free stuff, but they probably just think, oh, is this funny health fad? But gluten can be found in a few different things, can't it?
Yes, even gravy, even your Bisto gravy that you think, oh, I'm on a gluten-free diet. Here's me eating my roast dinner on a Sunday. And you put your Bisto on and even that's got gluten in it and wheat. So it's wheat, pasta, pizza, those sorts of places. And it gets hidden a lot in sauces that you might buy as a thickening agent.
Yeah.
And like I said, gravy. So you really do have to read the labels. And then the gluten-free products tend to be quite high in sugar. So that's not always the best place to turn to. So I tend to try and get clients to play around with different flours. So I might get them to play around with the chickpea flour and make like rotis and wraps from chickpea flour, or rice wraps that you can buy quite easily, or corn wraps, which as long as they're non-GMO corn wraps, if they feel the need for that kind of, you know, wrap or bread or, you know, things like that, or make your own bread. Sourdough is not too bad. I don't encourage it, but if somebody's really stuck and struggling, sourdough, because the gluten and gliadin, gliadin is the protein of gluten, has been fermented. It's kind of been broken down a bit, so our tummies can deal with it a bit better.
Fantastic. So it's good to know. So definitely the start for the bowel movements and getting more regular bowel movements is to cut out dairy, sugar, caffeine, alcohol and gluten. There are loads of replacements, and hopefully that should get somebody regular. Obviously it sounds like you probably add a lot of fiber into the diet with fruit and vegetables and seeds and nuts, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, seeds, nuts, flax seeds are brilliant. I really love flax seeds, especially in a smoothie, and you're grinding them up, can really help with the intestines and keeping everything flowing and moving. Water as well, water intake. If you look, there's a thing called the Bristol stool chart. If anyone wants to Google Bristol stools, and you'll see a picture of seven poos. And type one and type two on this chart, if you do Google it, generally kind of like rabbit droppings, which can show that somebody's potentially dehydrated. So water is, you know, really important part of helping bowel movements as well, keeping everything flowing.
Oh, yes, so important. Otherwise, and it sounds weird to use the word poo, but otherwise the poo can get really dry.
Yes,
because it gets dehydrated itself.
Yes. So, all of that. So flax seeds, aloe vera capsules, I like. They can definitely help, or aloe vera can definitely help with movements. And then there's some other kind of gut health products that we use, and probiotics, always trying to balance the stomach again, depending on their case history, of course. If they've had lots of antibiotics in the past, they might well have killed all their good bacteria as well as the bad bacteria in fighting the infection that they're fighting to take the antibiotics. But that can have a huge impact on the gut and blocking those pathways of daily motility out of the body.
Oh yeah, I love what you're saying, and I really love people to fully understand how important it is to have at least one bowel movement a day, because this is the basis for detoxification, and to make that a norm. In fact, we could do up from one to three, can't we?
Yes.
We're going to be talking more about detoxification and all the different detox pathways in a minute after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things. Make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh here on UK Health Radio on my show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing. I'm here with Victoria Godfrey. She's a naturopathic nutritionist, trained in cancer and in nutrigenomics, and founder of DNAPal.me. Now, Victoria, we were talking about bowel movements and how this is the basis of detoxification. It's a good place to start to make sure you're going at least once to three times a day. And we talked about the elimination diet. Let's talk about the next step. You mentioned a few other things. Where do you want to start? Should we talk about the lymphatics or the urine or the breath?
We could talk about the lymphatic and then a little bit about the breath. So with the lymphatic system, what I see a lot, and sometimes with breast cancer clients as well, is that a lot of people use aluminium deodorant. Nobody likes to sweat. And if we think of how the body is built, whoever built us, Mother Nature, or, you know, however we evolved, I don't believe anything was put in our body just for the sake of it. So as that detox pathway of sweating, we need to sweat. And one of the things in cancer that we use sometimes is a thing called mistletoe therapy, which heats the body up to a certain temperature to make you sweat. And again, you can use saunas and LED blankets that can also, you know, help you sweat, because sweating in the lymphatic system, again, is another way to get the toxins out and get rid of the waste that no longer serves us within the body.
So important. I love the idea of sweating, and I often recommend Epsom salt baths to people. Yes. As well.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love Epsom salt baths and a hot bath as well. But what seems to happen in our society nowadays, it's embarrassing if you sweat. If you lift up your arm and there's a wet patch, it's embarrassing. So people want to stop that. So people tend to use the aluminium deodorants, the antiperspirants. And what happens then is that the aluminium goes into the pores in our armpits and then swells the other side, stopping the sweat coming out, which is how it stops you sweating for 48 hours or 24 hours or whatever the marketing surrounding that deodorant is saying. That's not good. You want to be sweating. You want to be ridding those toxins. The other thing as well is smell. People go, oh, but I smell. And I go, oh, and then that's your liver. And they go, well, how do you know that? And since doing all the self-work on myself, I don't really wear deodorant. And I now know when my liver is overloaded. So the majority of the month I don't smell and don't use deodorant and can bop about my normal life. And then around my kind of period time, I'll know that I'm getting my period because my smell will change. Sorry, I don't know if this is...
Oh, I love this. I love this.
My smell will change and I'm like, oh, that's a bit, you know, not so nice. Must be getting my period. And then I know it's my hormones that are blocking up on my liver, and then I know to do a bit more work and that I'm getting my period because I've got more hormones from my menstrual cycle going around the body. And how I learned this, you know, I mentioned about my second child when I was I'm only 5'2", so 13 and a half stone, you know, I was a little round bauble thing, you know, little round thing. And being postpartum, which 6 weeks after having the baby, I just smelt so bad.
Really?
And everything I did, however much I washed under my armpits, I just smelt. So I went into one of our forums that we have, to, you know, because I'm sure as yourself, as a nutritional therapist, we know a lot, but we will never know everything because there's always new stuff coming out. So
yeah, I love forums.
Yeah, we have these support forums to say, you know, well, this is happening. Does anyone else have this experience? And everybody came back immediately when I said, I just smell. I'm 6 weeks after having a baby and I cannot get rid of this disgusting smell. And everyone came back going, liver, 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 liver. So that was almost another point to put me onto the path, because I'd had my genetic test with my liver pathways not working so well. And then being postpartum and just smelling really badly, that was what then incentivized me to do that year long looking after my liver with certain foods. And like I said, now I don't smell. And if I do smell, do you know what I use? And what? This sounds really hippie. I use bicarbonate of soda, really cheap from the supermarket. Put it under my armpits and it completely neutralizes the smell for a couple of days.
Would you put that on in the morning, or you just put it on as soon as you feel that you start smelling? Do you put it on after your shower in the morning?
Yeah, so generally after the shower. And sometimes I use those, you know, those mineral salt deodorants as well. Sometimes I use that. Bicarbonate of soda is so cheap, but such a wonderful product. And also, if you're fighting cancer, the bicarb in a bath can really help to break down the lactic acid and help draw it out of the body, because people with cancer tend to have higher levels of lactic acid. So, you know, plus soaking your food in like bicarbonate of soda for 15 minutes helps to remove the pesticides. So if you can't afford to eat organic because your budget just doesn't allow that, then at least work with taking off the pesticides off of the food. Apple cider vinegar as well, but I find that turns my food quite mushy, so I quite like soaking it in the bicarb and just some filtered water for 10 to 15 minutes to just remove some of the pesticide residue off of my food. It's not organic.
If you can't get organic, as you say, soak it, add some bicarbonate of soda, and you're doing something for your body there, because you're reducing the amount of toxins that are going in.
Yes, and like you mentioned earlier, you know, the body creams. And the so I read a post the other day. I haven't had time to verify it, but in this post, somebody, it was on Instagram, and it was a doctor that posted it. They said something like, there's 5 kilos a day of toxicity from your body products going straight into your bloodstream, because everything that goes onto our skin, being the biggest organ, goes straight into the bloodstream. And guess what? The liver's got to deal with that. So all those cheap kind of, you know, shower gels for £1, when you look at them, they're just full of long. I always say to people, if you can't say the name on the back of the chemicals, then you probably shouldn't be putting it on your body. And we were taught at college that, like, for face packs, you know, use an avocado on your face. Don't ever put on your skin and body anything that you would never eat, because again, your body's still got to process it. Your body's still got to deal with that.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on body brushing and moving the lymph in that way?
Totally. Yeah. So love body brushing. You do have to do it in a certain way though. So do make sure that you double check the ways that you should be brushing, because even I get confused. Is it inwards? Is it outwards? And then I have to double check before I do the skin brushing. And the other thing that's amazing for the lymphatic system is rebounding. You know, little small trampolines that can, you know, they don't take up too much space if you put them on the side and then you pull it down and you bounce for about 30 minutes. And that really stimulates the whole lymphatic system and just gets everything moving and then everything out. So with skin brushing and rebounding, and then you can do things like a lymphatic massage as well. You could go and have a treat somewhere and get, you know, a massage person who's trained, of course, to do a lymphatic massage. And also that will really help support the lymphatic system. Just sweat and just get it all out.
Don't be scared to sweat, definitely. And you're right, going back to what your point was, if people don't like to sweat, even I'm the same. For years, I didn't want to use those antiperspirant deodorants. And so I was using the other more natural ones. But then sometimes I just felt so yucky. And then recently I went back to antiperspirant. So now talking to you makes me realize I've got to go back.
Yeah, try the bicarb. And the other thing, what I say to some people in the city, because obviously I work with city traders, sometimes I work with city traders, you know, and they really don't want to lift up their shirt mark and have a big mark under their shirt, but some are blessed that they have gyms built into their building so they can quickly run off for showers. And I get them sometimes to take two shirts into work. So if it does happen, they've got another shirt there to change into, which I understand isn't ideal in every single work scenario. And it depends what you're dealing with at the time, depends on, you know, some of those circumstances as well. You know, if someone's quite sick and we really need to detox the body quite, not fast, because that's the wrong word to use, but we need to get all the stuff out. Then sometimes, you know, I will make suggestions like that to try and help people have a solution, so they're not just reaching out for the antiperspirants.
Now let's talk about breath and detoxification. How on earth can we detoxify through our breath, and what do we need to do?
So there's, if there's any yogis listening, we do a process called pranayama. And in yoga, I am a trained yoga teacher as well. In pranayama, we do a lot of breath work, and it's a lot of breathing. And there's a specific breath work called Kapalabhati. Now, there are six kriyas in yoga, and all these kriyas are cleansing. Some of them are where they put down a rag down their esophagus to clean. Some of it's quite dramatic. But with the kriya of the pranayama Kapalabhati, and sorry for these long words, if you've never heard these words before, they might sound a bit weird, is skull cleansing and lung cleansing. So using the breath to cleanse your brain and your skull, and also strengthening your lungs, and just working with cleansing. And, you know, because when we breathe out, that is a waste. When we're breathing in, even though it's oxygen, I call it prana, I call it life force, where if I'm in a yogic situation. And then on the exhale, it's all your waste that you're getting rid of. So getting into the habit of doing breathing, practicing to help expel the waste that's built up in the body is also really beneficial. I mean, BKS Iyengar, who's a big yogi, he says, if you do yoga every single day, you will never need a doctor again. And I truly believe that pranayama plays quite a big part in that. Because also, if you look at cancer doesn't like oxygen. So again, using breathing practices to get more oxygen into the body, and then helping keeping your body balanced, and, you know, things like that. And we all breathe so shallow, don't we? So I always sit cross-legged. When I sit my laptop all down, cross-legged with a straight back, but that's the yogi in me, because I'm always trying to get to opening my hip more and things like that. So while I'm working, I'm always trying to do things like that under the desk.
Victoria, when you said I'm always trying to get to something, I thought you were going to say I'm always trying to get to nirvana, because you're a yogi.
Well, there as well, yes. I was going to say yogic pose, and then I thought, oh, I better not, because it's full lotus, where your kind of ankle is on both sides of your thighs. It's hard to explain on a radio. That's what I'm always trying to practice under the table. And then that makes my back go straight, and then that makes me want to breathe properly.
Yeah, there's so much awareness that is involved in all of this stuff that we're talking about. It's about becoming aware of all these aspects of your body, and how you're breathing, what you're putting on your skin, what you're putting in your body, thinking about what's in the food that you eat. It does take a bit of work, but it's so important, because as we know, cancer's on the rise. People are experiencing health challenges, and if we can detoxify our body, if we can aerate our body, we reduce the chances of getting these long-term degenerative diseases, don't we?
Exactly. And, you know, like with heavy metals, we now know how sick heavy metals can make the body. We, you know, Alzheimer's, I can't remember the stats in Alzheimer's dementia, but I know it's like the second cause of death at the moment. It's rising quite fast up that chart to number one nearly. And Professor Chris Exley, who did some work from the Brain Bio Clinic, when he took 60 brains apart, all with Alzheimer's, they all had very high levels of aluminium in the brain. And he says, you know, that aluminium should not be anywhere in the body. We should not be putting aluminium on the body, in the body, using deodorants, beer cans, tomatoes, where the aluminiums of the tins leach into the tomatoes, vaccines, baby formula, which is all put into the aluminium coated containers. all those things, it's like just little, and then if that's crossing the blood-brain barrier and going up to the brain, you know, again, from a heavy metal perspective, that can cause all sorts of neurological degeneration, as what we're seeing in society. Now, that isn't the only reason for Alzheimer's dementia. I just want to add, some can be vascular, some can be alcohol related, which kills a lot of brain cells, and the plaque hardening in the brain, you know, they can be some of the other reasons. But if you look at Professor Chris Exley's work, it's really interesting in his brain and how aluminium and heavy metal should just not be near the body.
We're going to be back with you in a minute, Victoria, after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. I'm here with Victoria Godfrey, ex-award-winning producer, naturopathic nutritionist, trained in cancer and nutrigenomics. You can find her on dnapal.me and also follow her on Instagram and Facebook. Now, Victoria, I'd love to talk about diet, food, nutrition, and how we can use our diet to support our detox pathways. What are your thoughts?
So I always have one thing that I always come to, and it's the place that I always start. And it's also where the foods that I worked with for that year when I lost that 3.5 stone working with my genes, cruciferous veg.
What does that mean?
So it's that's what I get many times. What is cruciferous veg? It's your kale, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. I'm trying to remember. Cabbage. Yes, cabbage, spring greens, collard. And all of those work to support our detox pathways. They're just really, really good, especially from a hormone perspective as well. So if we have got excess hormones running around the body, cruciferous veggies, really good to support the detox pathways, giving you the correct nutrients that your liver likes and wants. Because if we look at every cell and every organ, there are certain nutrients that those organs and those cells really like and need to do their job. And if we're putting petrol into a diesel car, then that car's not going to work very well. So it's about trying to put the petrol in the petrol car and not the diesel, if that makes sense. So cruciferous veg is my big go-to, and that's what I focused on for that year. I ate 10 cruciferous vegetables per day.
Oh my god, how do you do that? How can you manage it?
So I've got the smoothie in the morning with flax seeds, and I would always add kale, spinach, and then a banana and some berries. And sometimes I would use a detox mix as well that might have some milk thistle in it. Milk thistle is really good for helping support the detox pathways, or wheatgrass and things like that. So sometimes using powders within my smoothie as well. At lunch, I would have rocket, which is a bitter. It's not quite a cruciferous veg, but it's a bitter that would stimulate the liver as well. And chard is also really good for it was also a bitter for supporting the liver. So I would always include spinach, rocket, Brussels sprouts raw, chopped, are lovely in a salad. They're really crunchy if you like that crunch. So I used to add the Brussels sprouts in, and then I'd just put, you know, tomatoes, cucumber, spring onions and that for taste, and with a apple cider vinegar and olive oil dressing, and sometimes fresh lemon juice, because lemon juice is really good for help clearing the cells, cleaning the body. And then at night, I'm going to write a cookbook one point, and it's going to be called The Mash Bowl, because that is how I survive dinner, with the mash bowl. So in a one pot, because I'm, you know, not too much mess for the busy woman. I had a newborn baby and a 2-year-old, plus working and everything else. So I would steam in one pot cauliflower, broccoli, carrots, one potato, so it wasn't too carby from the potato perspective. Steam it all, and then I would mash it all together, making the mash bowl.
And is this then, for the baby or for you?
This is for me. This is for me to make sure that, but you know, you can share it with all the family. And I would mash it all together, and then I would cover it in pesto, which made it like really comfort food. Or sometimes I would turn that mash bowl into a fish cake. So I would add salmon and then make fish cake patties, and then serve the fish cake with a big salad or some extra different vegetables that I hadn't included in the mash bowl. Or sometimes I would serve it with an organic chicken breast and just pour gravy over the mash bowl with the chicken breast. So it was so versatile for 3 or 4 different types of meals. But I just knew that in that thing that I'd mashed together, there was always at least 2 cruciferous veg, and then anything else that I could put onto my plate that would also help with my detox pathways. And then you can serve that fish cake with an extra salad and extra vegetables. And you don't feel like, I don't know, it's filling. You don't feel like you're missing out. You know, because sometimes on these things, you can feel like you're missing out. And you just got the comfort. When I just covered it in pesto, and I could just eat that really quickly and feed the babies at the same time. Mm-hmm. And your roast dinner on a, we still do it now for all of our roast dinners. We always have a piece of mash. Even if we have roast potatoes, we have a mash bowl, which is all the veg mashed together, covered in gravy with an organic chicken breast or roast chicken or something. And you only, for washing up, you're just steaming it, always steam, never boil, because you'll lose 50% of the nutrients if you boil. And you only lose 15% of the nutrients if you steam. But there's not much washing up.
Yes. Yeah. I love one pot meals. Yes. And also I love the, also salmon, just to go back to the topic of what you had your mash bowl with. The salmon contains protein, which everyone knows about, but protein's important for our liver detoxification as well, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And yeah, all types of protein, but specifically from the meat and fish perspective, from the meat, if you're eating clean meat, you've got your L-carnitine, and you've got all those 19 amino acids that are in one piece of meat that really all help support the actions, and you know, your liver's got a job to do, and if you're not feeding your liver right, then the liver won't be able to do that job very well.
Yeah, it's the raw materials you feed your body. Yeah. And then your body needs those ingredients, those raw materials, to do its job. Part of that is detoxification and then conjugation, making things in our body that we need.
Yes.
Hormones, etc. So we kind of break it down to realize actually we have to have those ingredients in. And it's good to have this little list from you, like kale, broccoli, cabbage, spring greens, collard. Then you're also using the bitters, which stimulate the secretion of those digestive juices, and that gets things going. So bitters like rocket, etc. And also doing it in a really easy way, adding these things in a way that isn't so difficult, because if you had to eat all of the like 10 vegetables in a day, I, even as a nutritionist, I find it hard.
Yes.
But if you can mix it into a smoothie, a mash, mix it into your meals, then
your salad at lunch still served with some sort of protein or chickpeas or things. Yes. It's like it really ticks the boxes, and it's not too time consuming.
Yeah. Now, obviously, I know you were super keen once you'd had your genetic test, and they'd identified a number of genes on there that maybe were showing that potentially your, by the sounds of it, liver detox pathways weren't working to their optimal capacity. You were super keen to then resolve that, will support yourself through your diet. And obviously then you lost the five stones in total.
Yeah, in 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just, that is a massive thing. Without having to go on any crazy diet, just doing these things we've mentioned today, focusing on the lifestyle, the diet. Now, tell us about that genetic test and how, you know, what, how this data can help us to kind of drill down into our health even more. For some people, kind of stabbing in the dark with their diet, aren't they? They're not sure what they should be eating, and we're all a bit different.
We are very different. And the genetic testing is really centers around personalized health for you, because you take one gene from your mom, one gene from your dad, that then makes your uniqueness, as we all know, because we can see the features in our children, or, well, I can never see my features in my children, but other people can. They go, you know. So we know that passes down. And it's wonderful to be empowered with your own knowledge of how your body works. Finding out about my liver and not really understanding it in the first place, and then understanding it and then working with it and seeing the changes, is really empowering for me. I mean, the other thing that we haven't talked about within today's thing is stress. Stress creates an endotoxin in the body that the liver still has to deal with. So the more stressed that we are, the more the liver will get overloaded. Then if we go out and then drink a bottle of vodka, and then we might smoke some cigarettes, or, you know, all these things that we might do to ourselves, the liver just isn't going to cope. And then the liver, if the liver can't get rid of all of the toxins that you've just put in the body, the liver will then make these fat cells, and this can include stress as well. The liver will house those endotoxins, or the toxins from food, or your hormones that can't get out of any of the waste systems that we've discussed, like lymphatic, urine and pooing. And it will make this fat cell, and it will house it, and it will say, I'm not letting you go until the liver is optimized. And then I can release the fat cell, release the toxin that's being housed in the fat cell, to go to the liver and keep the body healthy. And I just think the human body is amazing for doing that.
We were talking about how genetic testing was so important to you in understanding what you needed to do.
Yes.
In order to lose all that weight, feel amazing, feel healthy, deal with hormonal issues.
As well as the GSTN1, and then we've got the SOD2, SOD, which is another pathway within the liver. We also look at stress genes and how your body breaks down stress. And knowing that stress is also an endotoxin within the body, that's quite helpful to know whether your body can recover quite well from stressful situations, or whether it takes a long time to recover. Therefore, you can put more support into your body to manage the stress better. So don't turn to that bottle of wine to deal with that awful day at work. Go to a yoga class instead and do some meditation, and drink lots of water with lemon juice or something to keep trying to flush the body, because we can't change the environment, we can't change the situations that life might throw at us, but we can change how we deal with things.
I know before our show you talked to me about the environment. We can turn genes on and off according to the environment. Yeah. So we need to try and support ourselves in terms of providing our body with the right environment. But if something happens, there are ways you can take supplements, you can support your diet, and with that data from the genetic test, you kind of have an understanding of what your body's doing and what it would need if you were in a specific situation.
Within the app that we're building, that will be coming soon, you answer a lifestyle questionnaire of 21 questions that tells you where you are now. And then the genetics never change, because your genes are your genes and they're the ones that you've been given. But even if you've got a red, we do it with color coding, green, amber and red. So high impact is the red. So they're the ones that might need a little bit more attention. You want to turn the red ones. If they're operating too fast, you might want to slow them down. If they're too sluggish and slow, you might want to speed them up, therefore bringing your body into balance. And there's this thing that sits on top of genetics. So I work within nutrigenomics, and I know these are long terms. Nutrigenomics is literally nutrition for your genes. And then you've got the next level up, which is epigenetics, which is where your genes can express or not express. I like to use the light switch, turn them on and turn them off. and your diet, lifestyle and supplements work with those genes, we now know. I mean, this science is only about 20 years old, so there's new research coming out all the time, but it's fascinating that we can control our genes and our genetics by our diet, lifestyle and supplements, which is so empowering to have that knowledge of how your body works. I call it the roadmap. Here's the roadmap of how your body works. Now, you know, work with it. And you might have a gene that's not so great, but it might never express. So it doesn't matter because you turned it on.
If somebody wanted to do that lifestyle questionnaire and get a gene test, what would they do?
Email us at vicky@dnapal.me and then we can answer any questions and add you to the waiting list for when the app is coming. You can buy the genetic test now anyway, and you get a full PDF report, and then the digital platform will follow. It's be launching. We're going to hard launch around September time. It's all available already. It's just the one having your phone. So suddenly you're in a situation of life, you know, especially for women. Not only do we have fertility, then we have perimenopause, menopause and postmenopause. We might have a stressful situation, a house move or job or family member passing or something, you know. These are all situations that we can't avoid, but the app will then give you advice based on where you are now, if that makes sense. So you can go back into that consult and say, right, I wasn't pooing three times, I wasn't pooing for several days, but now I'm pooing every day. So that's great, we fixed that. And I'm now getting divorced. Oh no, that means that you're going to be stressed, and then your stress genes might be red. And your liver might not be operating so much. So therefore, we need to put in more liver support. We need to put some supplements in to support the adrenals. We need to suggest to you lifestyle changes like grounding or going outside with your bare feet on the garden or on sand if you're lucky enough to live near a beach. Get yourself to a yoga or meditation class, or go for a walk, or, you know, things like that that are all... Some of these tips are so easy and can make such a difference in people's lives.
Listeners, thank you for listening today to UK Health Radio. Look out for my show next week.